Hello, and welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. This is the five questions segment with Brian McCauley. He was our guest in episode 74, and we had a delightful chat with him, but Tom had to cut out as it was getting late, so we actually recorded the five questions after the normal interview, and it's a rather long five questions. We get into a nice discussion about tools, so I decided to release it as a separate episode. So without further ado, here are the five questions with Brian McCauley.
All right.
Sweet!
So, Tom, you're wrapping up. You got to head off to bed like usual?
Yeah, I got to scoot.
Brian, you looking to cut out because it's late, or do you have a couple more minutes?
Yeah, I've got a couple minutes.
Sweet.
I know you got to go, Tom, so I'm not looking to hold you up. I'm going to run through the five questions with Brian.
Sounds good, man. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Good night, Tom.
Peace out.
See you, Tom.
Anyway, so I know you were at least feigning to study for these questions, so I figure you just at least deserve to have them asked of you.
Well, I don't know. I was just thinking about it today.
I find they're a good conversation starter. I don't know if you heard, I had Jeremy's last name is escaping me, but I had Jeremy, $J on Twitter. I had him, he was in New York for a conference, and he came over we spent the afternoon together, and I just recorded us having a conversation around the five questions, and it was like a 15-minute talk, but it revealed to me that it was, you know, we usually just do this at the end of the interview, but it could just be its own thing on its own, because you can get into a conversation about what people's answers are.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, let me ask the five questions. So, Brian, to begin, how did you get into woodworking? I think you mentioned this a little bit, but elaborate a bit on how you got into it.
Well, I originally got into it as a teenager. My dad was a woodworker.
Okay.
He had, a full complement of craftsman tools in our basement. And he would build decorations, wall hangings, and things like that for the house. So that's kind of where it all started. And then, you know, I would tinker around a little bit with him. I built some skateboard ramps and speaker boxes and things like that. But I didn't really get into woodworking until, I needed to build some furniture. Mm-hmm. And I realized that building furniture isn't necessarily the way to start. But that was it for me.
Building something you want, I think, is the way to start. Whether it's, whatever you're starting, unless you're starting with a real newbie project, it's going to be over your head. But yeah, build something you want and you'll enjoy it. That's always been my advice.
Yeah. Well, I started pretty much as easy as you can get. Those Anna White tutorials, a chop saw and a pocket hole jig. And mm-hmm. I quickly outgrew that. That's where it started.
Yeah, and as quick as you do outgrow it, if the bug bites you, I think there is a tremendous value in those types of projects. I had a gentleman over my house. I think he was contacting Fine Woodworking, asking them to, for advice as to how to start woodworking, and they unfortunately knew. Well, no, that's not true. That's not fair to him. They know that I live in Long Island. They knew he lived in Long Island, so they actually connected me with this guy. And he was a he had to be almost 80.
Oh wow!
The physical attributes and mediocre eyesight that you would associate with someone who's almost 80.
Sure.
But he had a passion for this, and I spent an afternoon with him, and he wanted to jump right into mortises and tenons and do all this stuff. And he's talking to me about this table he needs to make, and that he wants to make a light for his chair and all this stuff he wants to do. And he's like, just slow down just a hair. And I showed him my Craig jig, and I showed him how to, essentially make a quickie little shaker table. We just made a leg and two aprons and put them all together. But, right. If you're to jump in and want to make something with mortises and tenons and all that, either you're going to get really into it, but I think more often than not, you're going to get discouraged because it's hard and you don't have any foundation on which to do that. So I always recommend somebody just getting into it, start off simple. And in the beginning, results count. So the fact that you finished a table means a lot more than the fact that you've done one mortise and tenon and it fits okay, and you've got 12 more to go before your table's done.
Right, exactly. Not to mention learning how to sharpen your chisels.
I'll tell you, that is still something that I can get chisels sharp, but not on a reliable basis. I need to come to peace with which sharpening method I'm going to use and just focus on it. But I actually have a very nice set of chisels I've not taken out of the wax yet because I'm not willing to screw up sharpening them.
Oh, I completely understand. I avoid my chisels like the plague if I can help it.
Well, then I'm going to assume then that at this point the chisels are not your favorite tool, though maybe they will be. So what is your favorite tool?
Oh, man. It's either my table saw or my domino. They're both used in, I mean, probably every single thing I build. You know, I'm going to go with my domino just because I find new uses for it all the time. Every single time I go to build something, I find a new way to use it. And I guess the same could be said for a table saw, but it's that excitement of, oh, wow, I can do this too.
Mm.
That'll probably wear off at some point. But
no, I saw the video you made with the attaching the breadboard ends with the domino.
Yeah, that is why I bought the domino.
Is it really?
No. Yes, I was building tables, man. And I needed to figure out a way to do it a little bit faster. And I actually saw a Wood Whisperer episode, and he did some breadboard ends with the domino. And I was like, that's it.
Oh, did he? I never saw that episode where... He did that.
It was an outdoor table or something.
Oh, okay. Is that his rustic outdoor table?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I kind of my style and yours match up, and you put rustic in front of something, and I kind of tune out.
Yeah. I saw that and said, "Gotta have it."
Now, I've seen your video on the breadboard ends, and yet I'm blanking. Which domino do you have? The big one or the little one?
The DF700. I have the big one.
Okay.
I tend to buy big that way. I don't want to be put in a situation where I need a bigger tool than I have to do something. I have a smaller shop. Well, my shop is very small actually. So I don't have room for duplicate tools.
Right.
So I bought the DF700 and then the Seneca accessories so that it can do all the stuff that the 500 does as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll debate that. I don't know exactly how many square foot your shop is, but I've seen your shop tour. Your shop is, I don't know that it's any bigger than mine.
They're probably about the same size.
And I managed to fit in plenty of duplicates, so you just need to want them.
Yeah, but I build big stuff, man.
You do. I'm questioning where this rocker is going to fit in my shop right now as I stare at it.
By the time I get a dining room table in here, I'm hurting to walk around. So
yeah. Yeah. Now, with the bigger domino and the Seneca accessories, I looked at them and I had the small domino before the big one came out, and now I have them both. I'll tell you, I use the small one 100 times for every time I use the big one. Mostly because I'm not building dining room tables as a rule, but I saw all the uses I got out of the small one, and when the big one came out, I said, that's going to be really useful for chairs and tables and bigger things that I ultimately would like to make. But the big one, it's not awkward is the wrong term to use because it's not awkward to use. It's very well balanced. It's got a nice handle. It's got a lot of control, but it is big and heavy. And
it is.
The small one is not. The small one can be done. You don't really do it with one hand because you have to hold the fence down with the other hand so it doesn't slide, but it's basically a one-handed tool. So the big one with those accessories to do the things the small one does always looked awkward to me. Is it? I mean, are you able to get what you need out of it with the accessories? Or do you find using the accessories and you're like, well, you know what? This does the deal, but it'd be nicer to get a small one.
I've never wanted the smaller one.
Okay.
Because of the accessories. The accessory, I mean, really, it's just a plate that goes on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really add any bulk to the tool. It just changes the depth so that the cutter can be centered on a 3/4 inch stock or half inch stock.
Right. Right.
So no, I haven't found it to be more cumbersome or more difficult to use. I haven't I haven't yet come across a situation where I wasn't able to use it when I wanted to.
And with those accessories, how small a domino does it go down to? Do you happen to know off the top of your head?
The bit?
Yeah.
The bit size? Five millimeters.
It goes to five, okay.
Yeah.
The reason in my head it strikes me as awkward is I've done a fair amount of work with both the five and the four. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing like the end of a little stretcher or something that's only like 3/4 of an inch wide, and I don't know what they call it, but it's a plastic piece that fits underneath the fence that will grip that from both sides, so you can easily plunge into the end of a really narrow board like that.
Right.
And I find that awkward with the 500, with the small one. I just, knowing that I do that operation, I think about that in the big one and think that would probably be awkward. But that's probably not even a situation you're running into because you're making big tables.
Right, exactly. And you know what? Let me go back. The smallest bit that I've used is the 5. I would imagine that the 4 millimeter would work. I can't see a reason why it wouldn't, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there'd be any reason why it wouldn't, but I'll say that having them both, I've never really explored the options for using the small bits in the big one, 'cause I just put the small bits in the small one.
Right.
So, all right. Well, I think we're striking that we're far too similar in our regards for wood design and now tools, because the domino would rank up there for me, though I would prefer the small one to the big one just based on my use. So now that we know what your tool is, who has influenced you the most?
Man, there's so many. As far as style and design goes, like I said, I'm a big fan of Jory Brigham. His stuff is awesome. I've been following him for years. And then when I saw he was on that television show, I was I was pumped. I watched every single one of them. Of course, Sam Maloof. I mean, who isn't inspired by the sculpted furniture? I'm also really into the Shaker design. I haven't had the opportunity to build much of it, but there's something about the simplicity, I think is the wrong word, but it just kind of works. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not super ornate, but it's still very elegant.
There's a functional elegance to it.
Yes. Yeah. And I like that a lot.
I agree. If you could take a Power Shaper to Shaker design, it'd be perfect.
I agree.
Have you ever read Art Carpenter's book? I'm blanking on the name of the book. Art Carpenter. Do you know Art Carpenter?
I don't. So I.
He
no,
is
I
a. He was. He is. He is past. He was a woodworker from California. Slightly different, but parallel scene to Sam Maloof, and. Okay. Did a lot of that style furniture, and I would put Art Carpenter, Morton Eschrich, and Sam Maloof all in kind of that same originators of the style. And while Art Carpenter didn't make really sculpted things the way Maloof's rockers were, as an example, if you look at like Maloof's tables, the stuff Art Carpenter made was very similar.
Okay.
And Art called it the California roundover style, and that's the name I've kind of taken for the style. I don't know if it's right or, you know, who they were all working at the same time. I don't know who you should really give credit to for originating it. I suspect they all kind of fed off each other, or at least Art Carpenter and Sam Maloof. Eschrich was a little before them, but regardless, it's a wonderful biography he wrote about the style, and there's just example after example of furniture that he made in it. And if you like that kind of furniture, it's a very good read. I think I picked mine up on Lee Valley. I could look up I'll try to put in the show notes what the name of the book is, because it's a very good book.
Yeah, I'd love to read it.
But so, with that, what was your biggest stumbling block?
Time management. Between the family and working and learning. I mean, I'm a relatively new woodworker. I've been doing it about 5 years. And I've had to learn a lot in those 5 years to be able to build the things that I build. So taking the time to figure everything out and, you know, make the mistakes I needed to make, and had lots of headaches just because I didn't take the time that I needed to.
Okay.
Several things had to be rebuilt.
I'm assuming that was exacerbated because you started off with commissioned work so early?
Yes. Yeah. When I started, I only built the things that I had already built for myself. You know, that's all I had advertised. That's all I was willing to do because I knew how to do that. And then as people would come to me and ask me to build other things, I would think, I could do that. I can do that. I can learn how to do that. And I would kind of build in that learning time into the amount of time I would tell the client that it would take me to build their piece. But it didn't always work out that way. you know, I at this point, I try to give myself a month to do an order.
Okay.
Usually doesn't take me that long, but that's the amount of time I try to give myself. And if there's something new that I haven't done or that I'm not confident that I can get right on the first try, that usually gives me enough time now to kind of figure it out before I do it in the final piece. But before, when I first started out, I just kind of went for it, and that kind of bit me in the butt once or twice.
Okay. No, I could see that. I mean, without doing commission pieces, just pieces for the family, I know how those are issues that I encounter, but I'm not, thankfully, not dealing with these hard deadlines and paying customers who have expectations.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I don't worry about the deadlines too much because I give myself enough time, and if they don't want to wait, they don't have to buy it.
Right. Right.
Yep. And it wasn't always like
that. I'm assuming that they understand they're buying a commissioned piece of furniture. While you do your best to give them a time frame, it's not like it's sitting on a shelf somewhere and you just need to ship it to them.
Exactly. You know, you would think that people would understand that. It surprises me how many don't. I'm always fielding emails from people who have ordered things from me that I'm working on, that they're like, when's it going to be done? How's it going? And I'm very good about sending photographs of the whole build process. And I started videoing my builds as a way to show the client exactly what it takes to do what I'm doing for them.
Right.
And then I also use those now as a tool for new clients. You know, I'll say, well, go, you know, look at how I do some of this stuff. This isn't, you know, screwed together Target furniture. You know,
right. Right. It's made for your wood.
Right. And it takes time, and it's,
do you ever give your clients a breakdown of the labor involved to make one, you know, certain number of hours for design and lumber procurement and milling? And, you know, do you ever get to that level of minutia, or you're giving them a lump sum price and it is what it is?
You know, no one's ever asked me that. Usually once everything is figured out, the design and the lumber that they want, because obviously the cost is heavily dependent on what type of lumber they want, I usually just give them the price and they say yay or nay. Usually they say nay and we go with a cheaper type of lumber.
So you're pricing things so that the lumber is a major component?
Yeah, my pricing model is heavily dependent on the type of lumber that they choose. Pretty much that is the main driving factor in the way I price. I know how long it's going to take me generally to do something. I know how much it's going to cost me in time and effort, shop maintenance and all of that. So really the biggest factor is how much is it going to cost me to buy this lumber? And that, obviously there's a huge price difference between red oak and walnut.
Yes.
You know,
and rightly so.
Yes.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a huge part of it.
'Cause I don't think it was when we spoke with her, but I've heard Carly Eisenberg on a few other podcasts since we interviewed her, and she was on one about blacksmithing, and I apologize, I'm forgetting the name of the podcast, but in it they discussed her pricing model, and when she's pricing work for customers, she actually spells out how many hours each step takes and provides an hourly rate. And I price things for a living at work. I'm a commercial roofing project manager, so I'm consistently working on pricing and working on labor and things like that. But I'm often not sharing my anticipated project time, because when I'm providing a lump sum estimate to a customer, if it takes less time, I make more money. That's my win. If it takes more time, I lose money, and that's my loss. But they pay what I told them they were going to pay from, you know, the beginning.
Right.
Whereas if you give a number of hours, sometimes if you come in under, they then put their hand out and ask for money back. So that's a disadvantage to providing the hours. But at the same time, when people don't have a perception of how much work goes into something, to be able to say, well, look, it's going to take me, you know, I've got 4 hours in there to fully develop the design and work out sketches and sit down with you and review them. And then I've got 2 hours of lumber selection and procurement. And then I've got an hour and a half to 3 hours for milling, depending on what it is. And then, you know, by the time you break it all down and they realize, well, wow, that table is going to be 15 hours or 30 hours or 50 hours or, you know, whatever it is based on how fancy and big it is, I would think that could have the potential to show them why it's worth what it is, and it's not cheaper than the one they get at Target.
You know, that's a really good point. I hadn't considered that. Then you'd also have to factor in the amount of time it takes to explain that to them.
Yeah, you absolutely would. At some point I might be missing that, because, you know, the industry I'm in at work, I can often put in tens of hours of estimating and site visits and stuff before we sign contracts. So I'm used to – it's just the nature of the industry is you put a ton of work in before you've ever signed contracts. So you sell it as best you can, and you make the money on the ones you can make on. Furniture's not quite that way, because you're not – there's just not enough zeros after the number, unfortunately. So you can't spend forever selling the product. You need them to just kind of understand what it is and make a decision either way quickly. The quicker they make a decision, the quicker you can move on to the next customer.
Exactly. I try to spend as little time as possible in the planning and selling stage. If they want to buy it, great. If they don't, someone else is right behind you. You know what I mean? So I guess it's sort of luxurious, because I don't have to cater to everybody if I don't want to.
Yeah, having a steady flow of customers based on what is essentially, you know, word of mouth isn't quite the right thing, but you're not actually advertising per se, are you? You're just having a presence on Facebook at this point?
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while I'll throw an ad on Craigslist or something. Like right now I have 3 commissions in the pipe. So if I don't get more by the time I'm down to, you know, 1 or 2, I might throw an ad out there, but it's not very often. Plus I use a break.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I just need a break. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I wouldn't mind a break. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, well, with that, let's wrap this up and move on to our last question. How has the internet influenced your work?
Incredibly. It's really what started it. Like I said, I started out with the whole Anna White thing, and that's because my wife showed me a photograph and said, if we can't buy this, I want you to make this. And it just happened to be one of her projects. And then I just kind of fell down the woodworking rabbit hole. I found, you know, all the different YouTubers out there, and I essentially learned that way. If it weren't for the internet, I would not be building the things that I'm building today. It's been an incredible influence on my work.
Well, that is excellent. I think that's probably true of most of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a wonderful thing. I was just talking to some other people online who have nothing to do with woodworking, and was kind of mentioning the woodworking community, and I reflected on it and how wonderful and fostering and supporting the whole online community is. And I think it's a great gift to all of us who do woodworking.
You know, as far as the community part goes, I'm pretty new to it. For, you know, the first 4 years or so, I was consuming content, right? And I wasn't really commenting on things. I wasn't really talking to other woodworkers. I was doing the Facebook thing, but that's because I was selling furniture on Facebook. I wasn't talking to other woodworkers on Facebook.
Right.
And then I got hooked up on Twitter because, well, I had a Twitter account, but I'd never done anything with it. And Yelp tweeted something about my business. And I thought, oh, wow, Twitter. Okay. So then I got on the Twitter thing, and that's really what got me into the community, talking with all the other woodworkers on Twitter. And from there, you know, I've become more active on YouTube, and, you know, I comment and I talk to people now, as opposed to before I was strictly consuming.
Mm. I would echo those comments. For anyone who's listening who isn't, I can't recommend enough that you get onto Twitter and join the conversation. Of all the social platforms I'm on, Twitter is the one I check the most frequently, the one I have the most conversations on. It's not the easiest to have a conversation on, I'll be the first to admit that, but
it's not.
As far as I'm concerned, it is the pulse of online woodworking. And there's other communities are focused around things like YouTube. And at some point, there's a lot of crossover between all the different communities. But if you just want a constant feed of woodworking discussion, just follow Woodworkers on Twitter. It's a great, great place to have conversation.
It is. It really is. And since I've been talking with other woodworkers on Twitter, my work has improved exponentially. The quality of what I'm doing. I've come to know so many new tools and different techniques, just from photos that people post and saying, "Hey, what did you do here? Like, what is that? How did you do that?"
Yeah, and that's just it. Is everyone is willing to share? I think everyone. I've not met anyone who's not willing to share.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's a very wonderful group like that. And from what I understand, it's really the only online group that I belong to, but from what I understand, there are other online communities that are not nearly as supportive as the woodworkers are. So I think as woodworkers, we need to make sure that we stay this supportive community, because we just want more people to join, not to cut out people who don't do it right.
Oh, I completely agree.
So, all right. Well, thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
That's the five questions. I appreciate you going through that and the whole thing.
No problem. It's fun.